order. The copy of the Open Meetings Act, Nebraska Revised State Statute 84-1407 through 84-1414 is posted on the back wall of the meeting room. And prior to turning to the agenda for today's meeting, I would like to announce the procedure that will be used for this meeting. With respect to each agenda item, the directors will first hear staff proposals and recommendations. Then the public will be given the opportunity to speak to the item. Lastly, the directors will discuss the item and take action. And we ask that the public not interrupt the director's discussion and actions. Thank you. And with that, can we have a quorum call, please?
Bonnet? Fowler?
Here.
McCormick? Thompson?
Here.
And Chairman?
Here. And proof of publication of meeting notice is posted in the back. Adoption of the agenda?
So move.
Is there a second?
Second.
Okay.
And we have a...
Roll call for that?
Fowler?
Aye.
McCormick? Thompson?
Yes.
Bonnet?
Yes.
And Chairman?
Yes. Item number six, amendments to Papio NRD's 2025 Pay Program Administration Manual. John Winkler, Jean Tate, and Ashley Tamala, HUB International.
Good afternoon, directors. I'm here this afternoon with Ashley to present the proposed amendments to the Pay Program Administration Manual for 2025. Recommendations are supported by HUB's Annual Compensation Planning Bulletin and the World of Work Salary Budget Survey for the state of Nebraska for 2024-2025. The proposed amendments include a 2.4% increase to the base pay structure and a cost of living adjustment of 1.8%. Last year, the board approved a 2.4% increase to the pay structure and a 1.3% cost of living adjustment. This year, district employees received on average a pay increase of 5%. Factors impacting an employee's pay increase include their annual performance rating and the relationship to market based on the pay structure. The district's employee reward strategy is designed to compensate performance equity and comparatively with a major goal to motivate employees to perform their best and to reward excellence. A redlined version of the proposed changes to the 2025 Pay Program Administration Manual is in your program. Ashley and I would be happy to address any questions you may have.
Do we need a motion on this first? Can we get a motion on this first of all?
I'll motion for staff recommendation.
Okay. Second. A second, okay. Is there any input from anybody that would like to ask questions on this from the audience? And how about the directors? Nothing at all? I have one question for Ashley.
Yes.
This is the name of your... The quarterback for Millard South is named Tamala. Is that any relation?
That is my husband's second cousin.
Okay. He's really, really good.
He's doing well, for sure.
He's like the player of the year in Nebraska. I saw that name, and I wonder if that was...
One of the games and watch. So.
Yes, they're quite a team. Anyway, that was the only question I had.
I couldn't have answered.
Well, that was easy enough.
Nebraska could use him.
That's for sure. And now people might actually know how to pronounce
There you go. Wonderful. Thank you. Are there any other questions? Yes, the director.
I'm going to vote against you because you guys beat Bellevue.
Just kidding.
He's a really good quarterback.
And a good kid. He's
really good. Any other questions that pertain to this? If not, could we just vote on
roll
this, please?
Call.
Roll call, please. That's the word.
Thompson?
Yes.
Bonnet?
Yes.
Fowler?
Yes.
Chairman.
Yes. Thank you. Agenda item number seven, amendments to the Papio NRD's 2025 Employee Handbook. John Winkler and Jean Tate again.
Hello again. Attached for your review and consideration is a redline version of the proposed changes to the Papio's 2025 Employee Handbook. The amendments include removing the requirement for employees to provide their physician's information from their personnel record, bad weather closing. We've combined the field office and rural water offices for the procedures used for inclement weather closing. The general manager will declare the offices closed in a group text message. Flex spending accounts removes the minimum contribution amount. travel and expense accounts removes the travel advance option as project managers are issued discretionary cards. Tuition reimbursement requires the approval from both the supervisor and general manager prior to enrollment for each class to be eligible for this program. And it clarifies the course reimbursement that it's based on the school year to allow for a clear and consistent method of tracking and budgeting these expenses. And the other updates are housekeeping in nature to include updating the calendar years on the forms and acknowledgments. And if you have no questions, I will entertain any that you might have, but our recommendation is that you approve the changes.
All right, thank you. Is there a motion on the floor to accept?
So moved.
So moved?
Second.
And second, we have a motion and a second. Is there any discussion on this from anybody in the audience? And directors, do you have any question for Gene? Must be pretty thorough. Thank you. If not, let's have a roll call.
Onit?
Yes.
Fowler?
Yes.
Thompson?
Yes.
And Chairman?
Yes. And that concludes my portion. Mr. Collins.
Good job. Good job.
Who's next?
A friend.
Thanks. Programs, projects, and operations subcommittee meeting December 10th, 2024. Call to order. Item number two, Notification of Open Meetings Act. I'll read the same. A copy of the Open Meetings Act, Nebraska Revised State Statute 84-1407 through 84-1414 is posted on the back wall of the meeting room. Prior to turning to the agenda for today's meeting, I would like to announce the procedure that will be used for this meeting. With respect to each agenda item, the board of directors will first hear staff proposals and recommendations. Then the public will be given the opportunity to speak to the item. Lastly, the directors will discuss the item and take action, and we ask that the public not interrupt the directors' discussion and action. Thank you. Item number three, quorum call.
Fowler?
Here.
Jeff?
Here.
Keezer?
Here.
Thompson?
Here.
And Chairman?
Aye. Item number four, adoption of agenda.
So moved.
Motion?
Second.
And a second. Roll call.
Jeff?
Yes.
Keezer?
Yes.
Thompson?
Yes.
Fowler?
Yes.
And Chairman?
Aye. Item number five, proof of publication of meeting notice, and this will become part of the permanent record. Item number six, interlocal agreement between the Papio Missouri River NRD and Nebraska Game and Parks Commission. Lori Lester and Ian.
Good afternoon. Today we have for you two agreements with the Nebraska Game and Parks Commission. When we are designing our reservoirs, we work with them to help with the design of especially the fisheries structures, but also other recreation features. Through the Sport Fish Restoration Program. We have two tonight, WP2, which is located just down the street at about 180th and Giles, and WP4 in Gretna at about 204th and Schramm. Both of these projects were awarded grant funding through the Sport Fish Restoration Program. WP2 was awarded $325,000. WP4 was awarded $350,000. Currently, both projects are in a little bit of a slow time. With the weather, there's some minimal work going on, but pretty much winter shutdown. We expect that both of them will be complete this spring. So we can answer any specific questions on either project or the agreements.
Thanks, Lori. Anyone from the public wish to speak to the item?
Brent, we need two votes.
So two votes. So let's take WP2 first and then vote, and then WP4 second.
Directors, Mr. Speed. Roll call.
No, we need a motion.
Need a motion, right.
Move with staff recommendation.
Second.
Anyone wish to speak? Roll call.
Teaser?
Yes.
Yes.
Fowler?
Yes.
Jeff?
Yes.
And Chairman?
Aye.
WP4 approved.
Item number seven.
No, six B.
Six B?
Yep.
Oh, that's WP4. Need a motion.
Motion.
Anyone wish to speak to the item? Roll call.
Thompson?
Yes.
Fowler?
Yes.
Jeff?
Yes.
Teasure?
Yes.
Item number seven, Beltline Trail Phase 3A construction bids. Eric Williams.
Good afternoon, everyone. If we can go to the map, please, Bill. I think it should be the first attachment there. The Beltline Trail comprehensive set of projects has been going on for a few years now. We have finished construction of Phase 1 at the north end, Phase 2 in Adams Park, and if you scroll down a little bit, the lower left corner of this map is Phase 3. Again, I apologize that the original master plan map that we're looking at had numbering that kind of worked a little bit differently. But what we're talking about today is from the trailhead at 1A on the map up to about 1B at the bioretention site. This is running downhill to the northeast in a former railroad corridor and includes the prominent trailhead recreation features and reconstruction of the access point for the entire trail corridor. This project has been the most comprehensive of any of the Beltline Trail sections that we've looked at so far. We completed the design. This is Phase 3A, the portion from the bioretention up to the permaculture center, which is numbered 1C. That area will become Phase 3B for construction bid. And again, I apologize that we have confusing naming. I talked to Amanda. We're going to come up with a new map that has more accurate numbering for the construction phases than what's shown here. But we wanted to make sure and move a project forward this year with the construction funding that we had allocated in the budget, and the Phase 3A section is ready. This will allow us to get the tree clearing moved forward in the winter and then be ready for the full grading and construction project in the spring. So we put this out for public bid. We received three bids. They were all very close together. Two of the three of them were under the estimate, and the low bid overall was Charles Verana, and that came in just below the estimate, including the alternate. The alternate was for some of the recreation features that during the design process we had talked with the city of Omaha about, and they do agree that we should construct that alternate. It's a little seating area, kind of an outdoor performance area with a little limestone ledges. So the alternate is included here, and that means that the combined low bid again was Charles Verana with the recommendation to award the construction contract in the amount of $2,725,224.78. And be glad to answer any questions about the recommendation or the project.
Thanks, Eric. Can I have a motion on this item?
A motion for staff recommendation.
Second.
A motion and a second. Anyone from the public wish to speak to the item? Directors?
Could you send an electronic copy of the bid tabs so they're readable?
Yes. Was that posted to the website? We'll make sure you have a copy.
They're small. Thank you.
Yeah, sorry. Yes. It's a lengthy bid tab, so lots of stuff, very tiny. We'll make sure you have a copy.
Did you have a question, Jeff?
Yeah.
Second?
Oh, it's been seconded.
Yeah, it's been seconded. Any questions?
Yeah. Okay,
I'm
sorry. Yes. So this is the third construction contract, or the second?
Third? This is the third construction contract.
And how many more left?
3B, and actually we are anticipating Phase 4 from the park up to the elementary school. That one's probably going to be ready next. There's some property rights stuff on 3B, so 3B will probably end up being last. But Phase 4 from the northeast corner of Adams Park along John A. Creighton up to what's listed as Painted Crosswalk there. We expect to have that ready for bidding in January so that it could also be ready for construction next year.
Right. So there's two more.
Two more construction contracts is what we anticipate.
And that'll be it.
Technically, there is also a Phase 5 from the master plan. Sorry, mm-hmm. I am agreeing with what you're saying. We do not anticipate moving to funnel design and construction of Phase 5 at this time. There's kind of a lot of complexity in that area. Some additional reinvestments, some other economic development activity would probably need to happen there first. So two remaining construction contracts.
But that's further north, northeast.
Bill, if you scroll down, it's actually right in the middle. From Permaculture Center toward Erskine Park up toward the southwest corner of Adams Park, and that's the area that's right around 40th and Lake. There's some auto repair facilities and some other construction equipment lots that are out there. There's not as clear of a location for the trail. That's why that was deprioritized. That's why it was numbered 5 originally. And at this point, we don't see a way to get that all the way to construction until some of those adjacent projects happen. So 4 and then 3B are expected to be the final construction contracts that we see in the near future.
Okay, near future. But when the whole Beltline Trail is done, you still got to do that other section.
Well, there's 2 dotted lines there. We don't know which of those is the preferred location. And again, that might be what I would call some number of years into the future. That's probably going to need more collaboration with the city of Omaha and with adjacent property owners, because there is no defined right-of-way in this area, and there's not really a clear way to get that right-of-way.
So we have 2 dead ends trail sections.
You can make it. The lower dotted line from Permaculture Center to Erskine Park then does come over onto John A. Creighton Boulevard. That is what I would call possible. The last section that is north from what says 2B up to 3A, that's on 36th Street. It's a very low volume street, so people can very easily walk or ride between these, but there's no sidewalk or right-of-way space there, so that would be a more complicated area. It would need some kind of a more aggressive right-of-way acquisition than I think we're prepared for right now. But you can make it between the two pretty easily, and we might do signage. We might work with the city of Omaha to get signage to indicate from the Beltline Trail at the Permaculture Center to Erskine Park, to John A. Creighton, to Adams Park. It's very easy to find your way through there. It's very clear where that is. So signs might help people to make it between those constructed sections.
No, and I've noticed in Omaha, there's the sheriffs in the street, which is Public Works, and then Parks here, which is our main partner on this.
Yep.
You anticipate any issues between, hey, put some sheriffs on the street and signage. Is that going to be Public Works? Or is that going to be Parks?
Probably Parks. From Erskine Park, Erskine Park, Panic Crossway, 2B, 3A, that's John A. Creighton Boulevard. Parks has recently invested in upgrading other sections of boulevards, including the Paxton Boulevard, which wraps around to Fontenelle Park. They are recognizing that the existing kind of wider sidewalks on the historic boulevards in eastern Omaha need to be upgraded. And so they are looking at that. And so that section might turn out to be constructed by Parks in the future, just
oh,
as
that'd be nice.
Place.
Yeah,
yeah.
That'd be nice.
They did that with Paxton Boulevard. They did a portion of John A. Creighton to the north. So we have a kind of a path forward, but the area right on 40th and Lake is the complicated section.
All right, so when's the ribbon cutting?
Substantial.
You can't answer that. I don't know. That's
well,
rhetorical
substantial completion
question.
On the very lower left at Hamilton and Military, we are anticipating October 1st. That's what's listed in the construction contract. And we are going to do everything we can to have that ready for an opening in the fall so that we don't get stuck in December without the ability to have a ribbon cutting, because nobody likes that.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions?
I have one brief one. Yes. So when this is completed, is it turned over to the city, all the maintenance from that point on?
Yes. We have 1 comprehensive interlocal for all phases. The city takes over operations and maintenance.
As soon as it's completed.
That's right. And they have already done that on phases 1 right. and 2 in the park.
I assume this was the same way.
Yep. Okay. The same interlocal covers all of it.
Thank you.
Roll call.
Fowler?
Yes.
Jeff?
Yes.
Teaser?
Yes.
Thompson?
Yes.
Dan Sherman?
Aye. Item number 8. The bridge debris removal bids, Eric.
Thank you. We had an additional bid opening on the same day. This is for the lead bridge over the Platte River. I think the next page is a map showing the location. Yeah, so lead bridge is a former railroad bridge over the Platte River from Sarpy County down to Cass County. And in the past, there has been debris that accumulates on the left or northwest side of the bridge. Most notably in 2019, after the major flood, we did some significant debris removal and then reconstruction from the debris impacting the structure. Since then, we have not seen structural impacts from the debris, but there has been a pretty significant amount of debris that has accumulated on the structure. John received notice from Game and Parks and some others about concerns for both people using the river for recreation and the potential safety risks from ice jam flooding, which could be caused by debris on the bridge. So we had an interlocal a few months ago between Papio, Lower Platte South, and Game and Parks to evenly share 1/3 of the cost each for debris removal in this location. Because Papio had administered the debris removal after the 2019 flood, we offered to administer this as well. We used the same construction bid documents that helped the process move forward quite quickly. And the contractors who bid, several of them also bid last time, so they were more familiar with the work that we needed completed. We did get 2 bids. And the low bid is from Final Grade Construction with the total amount of $83,500. The bid form does include an a per-unit price for tons of debris removal and an estimated number of tons removed. It's not possible to have a real accurate number on estimated tons, so it's important that we have that per-unit price, and then we will continue removing debris until we feel that the work has been satisfactorily completed. This is roughly the same number of tons that was removed from the bridge in 2019, and so we will continue the work, and we've discussed that with them, but that's the type of contract we're looking for here, with the best estimate available and a per-unit price, and then we'll continue going until the debris is gone. So the recommendation is to award the contract for debris removal to Final Grade in the amount of $83,500. Glad to answer any questions.
Thank you. We can have a motion on this item.
No, no. Second.
Anyone from the public wish to speak to the item? Directors?
I had one question. Are we responsible for the entire amount? Are we splitting this with Lower Platte South, et cetera?
Yep, one-third each, and the interlocal specified up to $200,000 from each of the three agencies. But as we went through the documents, we feel we'll be well below the total amount there. Again, contract is $83,500, interlocal specified up to $600,000. So we should have no trouble whatsoever staying within that. And then we will ask for reimbursement from the other two agencies when the work is complete.
When work is complete, you say?
Yep, work is anticipated to be in January and by the end of February to avoid the risk that ice out causes any damage in the area. So that's why we moved this forward pretty quickly to get a bid now, get the contract documents finalized next week, get them on site right after New Year's. I think they anticipate being done in January. The contract specifies three of the span locations as the priorities to be done by the end of January, and then the remaining spans or pier locations to be done by the end of February. So final construction completion for this is by the end of February.
All right, thank you.
Any other questions from directors?
Yes.
So remind me, who does the maintenance on the bridge and the trail?
Nebraska Game and Parks Commission does the maintenance. We, again, because we had administered the contract in 2019 and they had a staff change from the people who were at the park there just maybe a month before we began this process, we came to that interlocal agreement where we would administer this on behalf.
How long is the interlocal?
I'm sorry?
How long is the interlocal?
The original was when the bridge was constructed. We amended it, I think, once in 2019 for that debris removal. We amended the interlocal again this time. So after this, it would not be the responsibility of Papio to continue this type of work.
It wasn't before.
It wasn't, which is why we had the interlocal.
It's not before.
That's right.
We took it on.
That's right. We agreed to take it on to help out the other agency who does the normal day-to-day maintenance, because this is somewhat outside of a annual type of maintenance. It's only happening about every 5 or so years.
It is maintenance.
Yes, it is. It's a type of maintenance, but with an unknown timeline. So in the future, they will be responsible for it again.
Awesome.
Any other questions? Roll call.
Jeff?
Yes.
Teaser?
Yes.
Thompson?
Yes.
Fowler?
Yes.
And Sherman?
Aye. Item number 9, amendment to Lower Platte River Drought Consortium Interlocal Agreement. Philip?
Good afternoon, directors. This is a fairly simple one here. This is just asking to you guys to execute the new amendment to the Lower Platte River Consortium Interlocal. This is pretty simple. This is a group that has $0 budget. It's consisting of Lower Platte North, Lower Platte South, Lincoln Municipal Water, MUD, and Nebraska Department of Natural Resources. Luckily for me, no USGS is involved with this. And so this year, there's only two changes that are different compared to normal. The first of those is that this is an extension of 5 years instead of just the 1 year. All the other groups in this interlocal have been pushing for an extended period instead of just 1 year at a time for the last 2 years, and we finally got Lincoln Municipal on board. I guess they're a little touchy about having anything more than a year at a time. It was great fun. And then the other change is that we're changing the name of the interlocal to the Lower Platte River Drought Consortium. The consortium was enacted to really kind of coordinate the drought planning and messaging amongst the NRDs in the state. And we never had drought in the name for some reason, and so we're adding that to the name so that way it's a little bit more clear. That's it.
Can I have a motion on this item?
So moved.
Second.
Second. Anyone from the public wish to speak to the item? Directors?
I would like to.
Yes, go ahead.
Sorry. So it's a zero-cost budget. Are there, in the agreement, are there items that are required to be completed? Should we?
Nope.
So there's no budget forced?
Nope, not at this time. If there was, if the collective decided that there was a project that we wanted to study or have further information on that would require a budget, that would come before the board, all the boards in the group. So, and I don't think we've had any costs for several years, so.
Sorry, thank you.
Roll call.
Caesar?
Yes.
Thompson?
Yes.
Fowler?
Yes.
Jeff?
Yes.
And Sherman?
Aye. Item number 10, contract with NB Hardy for Ice Gym Explosive Services. Ian?
Good afternoon, everyone. So for your consideration tonight, I have a contract with NB Hardy for Ice Gym Explosive Services on the Platte River. The term of this agreement is 5 years, which is the same as our existing agreement. That agreement was signed in 2020 and is going to expire at the end of this month. So as we're just moving into Ice Gym season here, it's important for us to get another contractor on board to provide this service should we need it. Just quick background on this agreement and where it stems from, or on this this contract where it stems from. In 1994, the district entered the Platte River Ice Jam Removal Interlocal Cooperation Agreement. That agreement set a plan for dealing with ice jams should they occur, and per the language of the agreement, the PAPU NRD administers the explosives contract. We also maintain an ice jam fund, which is used to pay for this service if we need it. That fund maintains a balance of $150,000, and as funds are expended, the other parties to the agreement, including ourselves, pay back into the fund to maintain that balance year to year in the case of an ice jam emergency. The other parties to the agreement are Douglas County, Sarpy County, Saunders County, Cass County, and then ourselves, Lower Platte North NRD and Lower Platte South NRD. As far as this agreement and the contractor, NB Hardy was a company that we worked with briefly during the 2022 Missouri River Ice Jam, which is not covered under this agreement. So we were looking for another contractor that could provide the Ice Jam explosive service during that time. NB Hardy was extremely responsive, and they met all the insurance requirements. So we became aware of them. They're based out of Missouri, so a little bit closer than the contractor we used in our previous contract, Dicon Explosive Corps, who's based out of Oklahoma. Just overall, very good experience. They have a lengthy and safe experience with the use of explosives. So we believe them to be fully qualified to provide this service if we need it. And the agreement itself is very similar to our previous. The language is mostly the same. It provides for the various insurance requirements, which NB Hardy maintains, so no issue there, but that language is part of the agreement. And then also our procedure for issuing notices, standby notices, and mobilization notices. And then finally, the various pricing details of the agreement. A couple of fixed fees that I'll note here. Firstly, a $10,000 annual retainer, which is going to be paid to $5,000 to NB Hardy and then $5,000 to the helicopter subcontractor, Hexagon Helicopters. They're based out of Valley, and they were the subcontractor on the previous contract as well. So very familiar with them. They have their FAA license, and they're familiar with this, with the needs of this work. Additional fixed charges here would be upon receiving a mobilization notice from the district, NB Hardy would be entitled to a $7,500 mobilization fee and a minimum charge of $8,220, regardless of any work completed. But any further work beyond that would be billed at the hourly rates that they prescribed in their Exhibit A. Additionally, of note, should work occur, should there be an ice jam, they need to mobilize, should they do any blasting, then that $10,000 retainer would be put towards the final invoice from their work. It would not be paid in addition. So that's just kind of a quick run through of this. I'm happy to answer any questions on the Ice Jam Interlocal or on the agreement or on NB Hardy. I know there are a couple of kind of conditional payment scenarios there. So on the second page of this, I do have a couple of tables here that lay out the most common scenarios that we would see, you know, either no activity, we issue a mobilization notice, but there's no additional work, or we issue a mobilization notice and we do need to do some blasting, so you can get an idea of what that would look like. And then in 2015 and 2019, we did have to mobilize for this contract with our previous contractor, and you can see what those costs were. So with the way we structured this new agreement, a little bit of savings for the district. But yeah, happy to answer any questions. I should also note that, you know, this is very specific work. It's not something that is easy to go out for, you know, competitive pricing for. We're aware of a couple of different contractors, but we believe N.B. Hardy is fully qualified for this, and there's not really another or a wide field of other companies who could offer this service. So as part of the recommendation, not just recommending executing this contract, but waiving the district's purchasing policy because it would be for services potentially above 100,000. But any questions, happy to answer them.
Thanks, Ian. We have a motion on this item.
So moved. Second.
Anyone from the public wish to speak to the item? Directors?
I had one brief question.
Okay.
How many times in the last 10 years have we utilized these type of companies?
So as far as mobilization goes, I know we mobilized in 2015 and 2019. Nice. The last time we blasted, I know we blasted in 93.
Okay. So last time we actually blasted ice was 1993?
Mm-hmm. 97, yeah.
97, really?
1997, yeah. It's
been a while.
Yeah.
Okay.
But it's not used very often.
No.
But it's nice to have when you need to use it.
No, yeah. You don't want to use it.
You know, you need it. It's the only thing there.
Hmm. Yeah. I have two questions. First is, if you mobilize but then don't have an ICE target, is there a backup target, such as an obstruction?
You know, I think that would probably be decided on a case-by-case basis, just based on the what's occurring. I mean, typically we wouldn't mobilize unless there was an ice jam that had formed, and I typically, if there's a backup of water that was threatening infrastructure to a degree that we felt like blasting was necessary. Blasting is always the last resort. We really don't want to do it unless we feel like we need to.
I'd like to see a plan B just in case it happens. 2019 was scary, but if you're mobilized and you don't have a ICE target in mind.
There's no ICE target. There's nothing to
there's
burn.
Other obstructions, though. I don't know if you could legally blast away.
Too close to the bridge.
We can only destroy ice.
Do you have a backup?
Could we use it on a lead bridge?
Like, well, you could.
Those jams. If they're not available for whatever reason, is there a backup in place?
Yeah, I mean, per the agreement, we wouldn't have a set backup. Dicon was the previous contractor, and they always showed up, and they did good work as well. So we certainly could reach out in the event that. But, I mean, the purpose of the agreement is to have N.B. Hardy retained for this service, provide a duty to perform the service in the case of emergency. So I hope it wouldn't come to having to find another contractor while this agreement is in place.
And the Air Force does not bomb river ice. We've been asked that before, and they do not do that. So they're not a backup.
I'd love to have the Air Force, but we're contracting with N.B. Hardy, just so I understand where you're going with this. Why wouldn't we contract directly with Hexcon?
Well, Hexcon doesn't perform any blasting. He's a helicopter pilot. That's their service. So N.B. Hardy does the specific blasting.
Hexcon's the ride. Yeah. These guys are blessed blasters.
They dropped the dynamite, right?
Yeah.
Jim,
yeah.
Any questions?
Yes.
Just for the information of the directors, how far upstream does this agreement reach? Does it go all the way to Fremont?
Yeah, so it covers...
Just Saunders County, yeah. Downstream of
Fremont. To the Missouri River confluence.
Not the city of Fremont, that downstream.
Downstream of Fremont. Yeah.
Okay, so from basically Woodcliff downstream? Right. So it would pick up all of Union Dyke, the upper end of Union Dyke.
So,
thank you.
So what happens above that area of Woodcliff? Just too bad?
Fremont's going to have to make their own decision.
Yeah. Yeah. As far as blasting goes, we wouldn't blast above that area.
Yeah.
And partially because it has to be open for this, downstream has to be open for it to work. Mm-hmm. So
I would say none of the other NRDs upstream will employ this type of service.
Okay.
Last year, we had an incident on Christmas Day, right, John?
On the Missouri River.
On the Missouri River.
2 years ago.
2 years? My hell, time flies. We don't have jurisdiction on the Missouri, and you had mentioned it. Now, as a side note, has the Corps of Engineers done anything to assure that ice jams on the Missouri can be executed?
They've all got blown.
They do not deploy explosives.
It turns the town sturgeon.
They had to do something about rewriting a policy memo, and that takes 2 years or 4 years or 10 years. Who knows?
Okay. And actually, this company here, when we called them at that time, they mobilized and everything on Christmas Day to be able to deploy explosives. And our helicopter contractor actually pulled his helicopter out of storage on Christmas Day and got it ready for us to be able to act. So they were on the spot immediately, and OPPD and MED paid their mobilization in that, but they responded. Yeah, it didn't matter. They were ready to go Christmas Day. So,
which, as for the record, we our reputation is positive, and the was MED called us. Who called us first?
The governor.
John.
The governor told OPPD and MED to call me.
Yeah.
On Christmas.
Which is
Eve.
Commendable. Yeah, we got that reputation, so I'm not asking that we follow up, but for future reference, the emergency line at the Corps of Engineers has to be manned 365 days a year. This is an editorial statement I'll make, and I'll stop.
I don't know if that puts us on speed dial or the low man on the total pool.
I was dumb enough to answer my phone on Christmas Eve. I thought it was a Christmas wish, and it was like, we have a problem. Like, okay.
So I know they were exploring some other methods, dropping something to pierce the ice.
Yes.
And then have they explored any other methods to drop something so that explosives could pierce the ice? Because it would be much more effective from underneath or...
I'm not sure if they've really looked at it in combination. That's a good question.
Maybe something to look at.
Yeah, I know that actually Hexagon is the one who has that device. I think they call it the Hexagon. It's like a metal-shaped hexagon thing that they drop from the helicopter to try to break up the ice where they can. And I think they've had limited success with that, just depending on the amount and the size of it.
Only a couple hundred pounds.
Right. We also have another kind of plan we can try prior to blasting this year, which is
drop it on top.
Yeah, and the National Guard is right there, and we've been working with them, of course, for a long time on Western Sarpy and Kirk Creek Levy, and they were kind of up for it, you know.
Good training.
If the conditions are right, that's something we could try if we could get that.
Might be worth exploring some of those.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions? Roll.
Thompson?
Yes.
Yes.
Jack?
Yes.
Caesar? Yes.
And Chairman?
Aye. That completes my report.
We'll call the PLPA, or I'm sorry, FEL subcommittee meeting to order. But, General, before I open the meeting, I guess I have a question for you. I'm sitting there looking at Ted Jaff. How come he has a nicer looking hat than I did?
He must take care of it.
Oh.
He must value it.
Nice hat, Ted.
Nice hat. It is a nice hat.
We'll call the meeting to order. Notification of the Open Meeting Act is posted in the room of the building. Quorum call, please.
Conley?
Aye.
Davidson?
Here.
Emerson? McCormick?
Here.
Chairman?
Okay. Hearing aid not working real well. Mm-hmm. Adoption agenda.
So moved. Second.
Roll call, please.
Davidson?
Yes.
McCormick?
Yes.
Conley?
Aye.
Chairman?
Yes. Item 5, proof of publication of the meeting. I have it before me. Moving on to item 6, fiscal year 2024 audit. Terry Fry and Tim Lenz from Bergen KDV. How you doing, Carrie?
How are you?
Good.
Well, we have Tim from planning slash from KDV here to talk a little bit about the audit.
Thank you, Carrie. Good evening, directors, or afternoon. Here to present the June 30, 2024 audit. I think it's in your packet, as well as a letter that we're required to have in writing with you all, those charges of governance. Happy to report that if you looked at page one, we have our audit opinion over these financial statements. Financial statements are prepared on the accrual basis of accounting in accordance with generally accepted accounting principles. We're giving a clean opinion, an unmodified opinion on those financial statements, meaning that they follow all the standards that they need to follow and meets all the requirements of the state auditor and getting that filed with them. Later on in the audit report, there are two different reports back there. One is our report over internal controls over financial reporting and compliance. Happy to report that the district complied with their annual adopted budget, and we did not note any non-compliance. We did have one material adjustment, and so that's what is referred to as the material weakness there. Nothing that we're concerned about there. I think that can be resolved going forward. It was just simply an oversight on a accrual of retainage on some of your larger jobs. And then with the district expending more than $750,000 of federal funds, we have to do what's called a single audit. And there's a arithmetic formula that we have to go through to determine which of the federal programs fall under that and what you need to test in a given year. This year it was the Building Resilient Infrastructure and Communities Program, so the BRIC program. Happy to report on that. Through our testing of all the material compliance requirements of that program, the district complied with all those compliance requirements, and we had no material weaknesses in controls over the compliance of that program that we identified either. But happy to answer any questions that any of you may have over the audit report. We can dive into numbers and spend all night if you want, but whatever you want.
Any comments from the general public? Can we get a motion on the floor?
I move to accept the audit as recommended.
Second.
Give a second.
Copy.
Okay, thank you. Directors, any comments? Sam?
Just want to say thank you, Carrie, and your staff. As always, you're on top of it. You guys do such an amazing job. You make us all look great. Thank you so much.
Absolutely right.
And there's only three of them.
Any other comments from directors, questions? Hearing none, roll call.
McCormick?
Yes.
Conley?
Aye.
Davidson?
Yes.
Chairman?
Yes. Thank you very much. Item 7, demolition contract with Bruce Excavation for dam site 7, over 110%. Ian.
All right, back again. I got one more for you here. So this is regarding a demolition contract that we executed back in August 2024. It finished up about a month ago here. The original contract was within management authority. It was $56,992. It was to demolish a number of buildings and quite a bit of junk that was left over at this farmstead. Where Dam Site 7 is going to be built. There's a exhibit on the second page here if you're curious of the general area. It's just southeast of 168th Street and Bennington Road, and there's an aerial of the structures, at least, you can see there. So Bruce went out and started demolishing. As they were going, they found a large quantity of additional debris buried near these structures as they were removing the footings of them. So they continued to remove and dispose of the material that was there. And the result of that was an increase in the tonnage of the contract above what they had estimated. We did verify that increased amount, at least as far as the landfill fees and landfill tonnage goes, with some scale tickets they sent. The result was a higher final pay application, $74,031.52, and that's a 30% increase or a $17,039.52 increase from the original contract. So per the district purchasing policy, any increase greater than 10% needs board approval. But the recommendation would be to allow general manager to issue a change order on this contract for this final not to exceed amount of $74,031.52. I'm happy to answer any questions on this work.
Can we get a motion on the floor, please?
So move.
Second.
Thank you. Anybody from the general public wish to comment? Directors. Director Thompson.
Yeah, could we have saved some money, get the helicopter, amend that contract? And no.
Could have just been more debris.
Next time I have something to demolish, I'll keep that in mind.
Okay, that's all I have.
Anybody else?
I had a question.
Yes.
Did this company do a site survey prior to the bidding to not know that there was...
Yeah, they drove in, took a look. It was informal proposal, but there was a lot of buried material around there. They had done a demolition project actually prior to in the area, and on that one they underrun by 21,086. So they give us our best estimate on what they see, but it's not as detailed as like a competitive.
I mean, do the other bidders account for the extra debris in their bids? That's why their bids are higher, because they knew there would be stuff that these guys didn't see.
I'm not sure I could go back and take a look, but...
I mean, what's the purpose of bidding on a project if you can come back and get a whole bunch of
money? This one wasn't actually bid. It was within management.
It was, yeah, we just, you know, we picked them. Yeah. I think, I don't know if anybody could see it. It was actually buried. I mean, it was buried. You'd have to do soil samples and excavation to see what was there. Yeah. So that would have been tough to...
Director McFarland.
So what did the debris consist of? Asbestos? Oil tanks.
Yeah, there was asbestos. It was, I mean, just from me being out there and seeing above ground, it was a variety of things.
Ground or below?
What I saw above ground. I didn't see a lot of the additional debris. I got the scale tickets to verify the quantity.
I'm just curious, what were they digging up? Old concrete or?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of old
wasn't
concrete.
Wasn't an illegal landfill from the previous owner?
No, nothing alarming. They referred to it as hidden treasures. I think it was a lot of junk. A lot of junk was above ground. Definitely a lot of concrete. You can see that in the increased tonnage, but specifics, they didn't let me know. I could definitely ask. And
that'd be awesome.
Yeah, I'll ask and let you know.
Is it necessary to dig up the buried footings, or are we going to do some grading there? Is that why we have to take that out?
In the future, we will be doing grading there. It's actually, if you look up where it's that red square is the general location. It's right where the dam is going to go. So, you want the soil to be pretty solid there,
right.
Certainly.
Yeah. And if we didn't get it this time, we'd be paying the contractor to take it out when they built the dams.
We also maintain these areas in the meantime. So this is going to be around as just a piece of land that we own until we start this construction project. So as far as going in and mowing and reseeding, having all that stuff in the way, even if it's semi-buried, that can be an issue long term. So we want it to be smooth and look nice and keep it well maintained. Also for neighboring property owners, we don't want it to be an eyesore. So those are some of the other things that factor in beyond just the design project, but that certainly is a concern as well.
Any further comments or questions? Seeing none, roll call, please.
Conley?
Yes.
McCormick?
Yes.
Chairman?
Yes. That concludes our agenda.
You want the gavel?
No. Do we have a gavel?
Yeah, right there.
I called you over the ad hoc consultant selection committee for the Silver Creek Watershed 35A. Gravity is not here. Notification of meeting, open meeting act has been previously reported. It's on the back wall of the room. Quorum call, please.
Finette.
Present.
Davidson.
Here.
Jeff.
Here.
Conley.
Here.
Thompson.
Here. Item 4, adoption agenda.
Davidson.
No, I need a motion.
Yeah, so moved.
Second.
Did you adopt it?
No, he just moved us.
I moved it. You moved it. There a second? There a second? Dred? Okay. Moved in second. Roll call.
Davidson?
Yes.
Jeff?
Yes.
Conley?
Aye.
Bonnet?
Yes.
Thompson?
Yes. Item 5, I have your proof of publication of this meeting. And item 6. Contract with Houston Engineering for the watershed, Terry Shoemaker.
Good evening. In November of 2024, the board approved, or they selected Houston Engineering to provide the design services necessary to construct Silver Creek Site 35A in Burke County. The location of that site will be, oh, wrong button, Bill. Well, it's going to be between site 9 or 6 on the left, and on the right is site 9. It's going to be down below site 34, which is up there. It's going to be in that red rectangle towards the bottom of it. There's about 1,300 acres of drain into this project, so it's going to be a final nice piece to the watershed project. Anyway, Houston Engineering and District staff have discussed and prepared a professional service agreement with scope services, time estimate we needed for this project. It's going to be divided into phase. This first phase will be a maximum fee of $156,426, which will include professional services needed for determine hazard class, 404 permit, geotechnical investigation, and preliminary design. So we kind of know what we're dealing with because we're not sure on the hazard class and we're not sure on the 404 permits requirements. And Mr. Sotak's here to answer any questions, or I can certainly. Thank you.
I need a motion on the floor.
Second.
So moved by who?
I'll say yes again.
No.
Well, either second. Split
either. All right. Any comments from general public? Directors?
I have one quick question, Terry. Where is this in relation to the Herman Dam, though?
The Herman Dam is in Washington County.
Right, but where is
west
this?
Of Herman. This is northwest of Takiema, Nebraska.
Okay, northwest of Takiema. Okay. It says quite a few miles.
Yeah. I mean, it's...
All right.
Is phase one, in fact, another amendment for construction period services and they're on this?
Well, yeah, this basically gets us to, I'll say, a 60% design.
Please identify yourself for the record.
Mike Sotak, he's an engineering engineer. So there's going to be another a design contract once we know what we're designing. So some of the stuff we have to do anyway. So we got started with field investigation to identify impacts so we know how, no matter how big the, if the dam's high, it has to be high hazard. It's going to be a lot bigger than if it's significant hazard. Then we're trying to figure out, you know, would that trip an individual permit so that we can plan for that in the design phase. So the biggest part of this is going to be doing the hazard class of the site there and looking at the downstream structures. Are they in the breach path? But also to the potential to work with Burke County to say, you know, can we protect that hazard class? If we build a significant hazard dam, can we use flood zoning to, you know, ensure that the breach path is protected and no one goes and builds a house immediately downstream the dam, thereby triggering high hazard criteria, you'd have to change the dam. So that's a majority of this, but we got a lot of environmental field work that had to be done anyway that was included. So we've got there's a pretty lengthy discussion of the phasing of it and kind of how that breaks out. But yeah, there'll actually be a design phase next, Jim, once we know exactly what we're designing.
Okay. Director.
Enlighten me as to the scope of how this is all going together. What are we looking to do with this one as well as these other adjacent projects?
So the Silver Creek Watershed Project, there was a plan written years ago, early 2000s, and it was primarily flood control in the agricultural flood control, but also stream grade control and sediment reduction. So hilly area, lots of loose soils, there's a lot of sediment in the area. So most of the dams up there are lower class dams. A couple of them are larger. This was one. Site 11 was already constructed. Was a high hazard dam. It's a little bit bigger like this one. I think it had 1,600 drainage acres going into it. So it's the Silver Creek Watershed was primarily written around agricultural flood protection, silt reduction, water quality improvements, and stream grade control. So not recreation, you know, or anything like that.
Right. Yeah. To be honest with you, one of the main goals when this project was developed in the late 1990s was to reduce the sediment load down the Burke Washington County Drainage District. And if you talk to the members of the drainage district that have lived there a long time, they will say there's been definite positive impacts in their system by the amount of sediment and erosion that's being held back in the watershed. You know, we've completed 24 structures. Most of them were done 20 years ago or more. So this is, and that's kind of been a gentleman's agreement. I know through the years they've asked us for assistance with some of their projects, and we've always said, well, we'll try to control it in the uplands so you don't have that problem downstream. And that's why, quite honestly, they're even excited about our Davis Creek WFPO project, which it, the Herman Dam is in that project, because a lot of the goals would be the same as what the Silver Creek watershed has been.
Will they be friendly landowners? Is that part of your study?
Is
will it be willing landowners to construct these? Is that part of your study, or we don't know yet?
And that's why
we'll find out after.
No. So the good news is that's why this dam is 35A. The original dam was designed back in the early 2000s, and that landowner backed out after it was designed, but before constructed. So we moved it upstream into the next landowner, who is a willing landowner. And the good news is there's two other landowners it's going to touch, and they are both happy for the project.
We have signed agreements, or will we have signed agreements before we proceed?
We will have signed agreements before the next phase. This design should allow us to know the impacts of the pool and the flood pool.
How big is the pool? How much is going on to their land? So they'll be able to see that. But Terry,
so we'll spend this money before we know that we'll lock them in at that point.
Yes. So we know how big it is, how they're going to impact it is.
I mean, right now, all landowners are on board. I mean, they're like, hurry up, get it done sort of thing.
Right,
so,
right.
And
so is the previous guy.
I know, but.
And then we're going to make sure that we're not going to flood the upstream dams.
That's one of the points. Yeah. We've got an elevation to that, and we're going to be balancing how much pool can we put in there to store sediment without impacting that upstream dam.
Thank you.
Any other comments from directors? Roll call.
Jeff?
Yes.
Conley?
Aye.
Bonner?
Yes.
Davidson?
Yes.
Thompson?
Yes.
Item 7, the ad hoc committee is adjourned.
4:57.
Good job.